there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 336. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Strolling over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go on over to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a special show for you this week. So much is going to happen, but we're going to start with our guest. He's going to set some of it up for you. Let's introduce him. David William Montgomery is a writer and a storyteller. Besides winning several Pittsburgh Moth Story Slams, he's also been a featured performer in the live storytelling group Risk with Kevin Allison. He's also a podcaster himself, having created dozens of episodes of his own show called Two Gays, No Girls at a Pizza Place. And he's got a very special present for all of our listeners out there. But first, let's chat a bit. David, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We have so much ground to cover, sir. Are you ready?
I hope that I am.
Okay.
I don't know if I am.
We'll find out. We'll find out. First, happy holidays to you.
You too. You, I already told you this off air, but you've saved me because I got to leave all the family stuff very early. I was like, I have a show that I have to do. Sorry, you guys. I'd love to stay, but I really got to run.
Did anyone ask, and what show do you have to go do?
They did, and then they... what they do is they ask questions like that and then they turn their ears off. So they, I could go back right now and say, what show are they doing? And they have no idea.
I do that with my family. And then if you go back and ask them, what show was he doing? They would say, it's something gay. We don't know. It's gay. It's very gay.
I love it.
Well, we're going to talk all about storytelling, which I am so excited to discuss. But first, we have to talk about this mythical place that I've heard of, but never have actually visited. On behalf of the Pittsburgh Tourism Bureau, sell our listeners on Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay. So first off, you are in Cleveland, correct?
Yes.
So you and I are supposed to hate each other, but I don't know what sports are, so I don't hate Cleveland.
Okay.
From what I've been, it's been explained to me, I'm supposed to hate Cleveland, and I say, why? Whenever I was like 14, I was like, why do I hate it? And I go, because it's not Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Pittsburgh is a weird place.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's grown a lot in the past several years in a lot of different ways. There's a weird gentrification growth happening and stuff like that, but I've, you know, pretty recently gotten into the art scene here of storytellers and comedians and different performers. It's given me a whole new love of this city, which, you know, it has its days. Some days I hate it, some days I love it, but no, these days it's all good stuff. It's a cool place.
All right.
And if you like rivers, we've got three of them.
Look at that. See, there was the Tourism Bureau. That was right there.
There you go.
Now, according to the documentary Queer as Folk, that is like the gay mecca there, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's funny that, like, I remember when I came out and everything around the time that that show was becoming a thing. And I remember... you know, anytime I travel anywhere, people are like, oh, is Liberty Avenue really like that? And I go, here's the deal with Liberty Avenue in downtown Pittsburgh. It's not like they have it on there. It is filled with gay bars, but it's largely filled with meth heads and homeless people. It's a weird, weird version of what they have on there. But no, it's funny, like the, you know, there are, Pittsburgh is, I don't call it a city. I joke around and call it a condensed suburb.
Okay.
Because the places, like, I live in it, technically it's, like, urban. It's, like, city life. But if you have never been here before, you would look at it and think, oh, this is, like, the suburbs. Cause it's, like, houses and walk-ups and things like that. But I always say that, you know, the quote-unquote city places that look like suburbs, they have the best gay bars. And whenever you go into downtown, which is supposed to be the most urban of the whole thing, it just, there's no life really happening. And it's changing. The landscape's changing in a lot of ways. But, yeah, it's a super weird place. So if you come here, just, you know, make it a quick happy hour thing where you walk in, you grab a drink on Liberty Avenue, and then you're like, all right, I'm done here. I got to go.
I hear you telling me to perhaps dial down my expectations.
Boy, nothing slips past you. You are very perceptive. It's a really great place. And it's the cost of living here is good enough that I can still make an okay amount of money and still be able to travel a lot. So it's cool.
There you go.
A fun place. Check it out.
I'm going to check it out. It's not that far away, I'm told.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, which is funny because I've been desperately trying to make it to Cleveland lately, and it just keeps on not happening. So where I'll probably end up being there while you're here. Something weird will happen.
Star-crossed storytellers.
Anti-serendipity or something.
Now, I mentioned in your intro a podcast yourself. Tell everyone about Two Gays, No Girls at a Pizza Place.
Yeah, I came up with this idea in the shower one day because I love podcasts so much. But the problem that I have with so many podcasts is that everyone has one.
Yeah.
And, you know, that can be a really amazing and wonderful thing. But a lot of times you'll listen to something and it's like just a couple of schleppy guys from like Tucson or something that are talking about just nothing at all. And they're not bringing anything of any substance or real entertainment value to it. And so I was like, I don't, you know, what am I selling to people whenever I go on the air? I'm not going to sit there and talk about, you know, whatever. I'm not going to give my opinions on toilet paper or whatever.
Right.
So I do a lot of improv and I write a lot of sketch. So I was like, it might be really fun to do character work on here in the style of, I don't know if you ever listened to Comedy Bang Bang before.
Yes, of course. But, yeah.
It's like, I sell it as like the poor gay man's version of Comedy Bang Bang, because our pilot episode I went on as Madonna, and my friend Nick, ironically, because he's very gay, he plays the straight man in all of these. I go on as a million different characters, and I'll improv interviews as that person, and we also do this usually in a different pizza place every week, and then we rate the pizza too. But pizza is like the least significant part of the whole show because it really just gave us the excuse to have that silly name. But no, it's a lot of improv comedy, a lot of sketch comedy, and our holiday episode is the penultimate sketch that I've ever gotten to take part in. I was so pleased to have. I've been really, really lucky with the people who have said yes to do my show.
Yeah.
I have Kevin Allison is a friend of mine. He does the Risk podcast. And I was thrilled whenever I got an in-person episode with him. But then I wrote this script. I was just like, this is a silly idea, but I'm going to do maybe a little radio play for our holiday episode, something along the lines of like a gay version of A Christmas Carol. And I thought about it and I was like, I do all these voices so I can record this and add Foley and music and it'll be fun. And then it sort of snowballed whenever I texted Kevin and said, if I sent you some dialogue as the narrator of the radio play, would you have any interest? And he goes, send it over. And so in an hour and a half's time, I have this just absurd dialogue from him. And I'm like, why stop there? So I start pulling out all the stops. I got Ed Begley Jr. to do some lines for it. I got Thomas Lennon also from The State and Another Period and all that kind of stuff. I got some of my favorite UCB improv people out in LA, Pam Murphy and Jeff Hiller, like hugely talented people. And you've seen them in every show you've ever watched. They're always in something and they've always got a little role where they're hiding in the background somewhere. And these are just some of the most talented people. And I can't believe they're saying yes to me. But I've been very blessed with that this year.
And we're going to hear that on this week's episode. Let's talk a bit about storytelling. Now, this is very exciting for me because this is a big part of my life here in Cleveland. I love performing at the storytelling shows here. I've done them, I don't know, half dozen times at this point in the past year. And it's just a blast. And I feel like there's a huge, I don't know if it's a resurgence. I feel like maybe we used to tell stories around the campfire. So let's say it's a resurgence of storytelling events. Tell everybody about this medium and why you are drawn to it.
It's funny. I feel like I mean, everybody in the world, you know, at the heart of it is really a storyteller.
Yeah.
Because everybody, no matter how insignificant you yourself think your experiences are, there's a story really in everything that you do. And my specialty is sort of taking really painful and horrible experiences and making them funny. And it turns out to be a very therapeutic and fun thing to take the audience through, you know. And but now I had a woman, Stacey Keene, who produces the local chapter of True Story here. They haven't done a show in a while, but I met her probably close to 2 years ago. And, you know, I would never have gotten in front of a microphone and talked to strangers in a billion years. But she said, I do the show and it'd be really fun if you like did a story. I love the way you talk and you like recall sensory memories and stuff. It's like, I think people would really get a kick out of you. And so she emails me a few days later, and I'm prepared to say no, but then it turns out it's on my birthday. And I thought that was just so perfectly written in the stars. I was like, I kind of should just, you know, take a risk and try to do this. So I did it, and it went well. The local producer of The Moth was there and said I should put my name in for their upcoming show, and I had never heard of The Moth at that point. I had only been listening to Risk for like 5 years, but I never had heard of The Moth. And I went and I put my name in, and I won the very first time that I did it. And I was like, okay, this is like very validating and very fun to do. And so it's taken on a life of its own. The Moth has been so kind to me. They had me do their main stage event here in September, and I just 2 weeks ago got back. They flew me out to Portland to do their biggest capacity audience show out there in Portland, Oregon. It was so bizarre to me to be like, you know, in the big picture, pretty brand new to this. I've only been doing this a couple of years, and then I get to do this in front of nearly 3,000 people.
Wow.
And it's invigorating, and it's so much fun to think of like the impact that your stories have on people when you tell them in a public forum. I told a story once about my brother coming out to me, and he's older than me by 7 years, he's got some things going on that made it a lot harder for him to come out. So, I told this story, and it wasn't a particularly sad one. Like, I made it funny, but I still dived into some personal stuff. This woman came up to me after the show, and she gave me a big hug, and she said, "Thank you for telling that." And I was like, "Oh, thank you for listening. Always nice to meet a fan." But I said, "Yes, no, thanks for listening." And she said, "You know," and she started to cry and wipe tears away from her face. She said, "My sister came out to me not long ago, and I shut her out of my life, and I didn't think just about how difficult, you know, what it was for her to even say those words to me. So I'm heading home and calling her tonight, so thank you." And I'm like, oh my God. Like, just based on me spinning something into some funny thing, it was made into a format that this woman was receptive to it, and then changed her life and changed her relationship, which is such a crazy, weird feeling. But,
huge.
You know, anybody can have power in their words. It's great.
Huge, huge. I've never done one of these where it doesn't matter what topic I cover, where I've gotten off the stage and some male has not come up to me. I'm not kidding you. Every single time I've told a story, be it at the museum or we have a great storytelling show here. If you guys are here in Cleveland, the first Wednesday of the month, Keep Talking. It's a great storytelling show that I've done a bunch of times. I have never walked off the stage without some male coming up to me and saying, "Hey, you know what? My wife is Jewish too." And the funny thing is, my stories often have absolutely nothing to do with Judaism. I'm not even sure that I mention it, but I learn about everybody's wife and how they're Jewish.
Oh, that's great.
I don't know what that's about. Now, you briefly mentioned this, but talk to me about what you get out of it. So you get up there, you tell these stories that are intensely personal every time because they happen to you. What do you get out of the experience?
Honestly, I get a joy out of the process. A lot, just about recalling all this stuff that so much of it is so, it's like such minutiae ingrained in you that you forget about it. And then you sit down and really actively think about it and write it out. So the process for me is really fun. But also, I will not sit here and lie to you, Ken. I live for the applause.
Nice. Nice.
Oh, I love it. I always joke around and say, my parents did not love me growing up, so I love it whenever a room is screaming my name. Oh, but yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun, especially coming from a background where I did not ever in a million years think I would have the confidence to get up and stand in front of, I mean, God, the first show that I ever did was at like a tiny little used bookstore with like 30, 35 people in it, and I was ready to vomit that day. I was sick to my stomach about performing in front of them. And then to think, you know, I just walked off of a stage where 3,000 people are like, I had to stop the story a zillion times because they were laughing so hard because they loved me. And I said, okay, that is progress.
I love it. I love it. Can I also say, and by the way, I don't talk fashion at all, you, David Montgomery, you have really cool shirts.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I always, every time I do a show that I know is being filmed or photographed, I always have to stop and think, wait a second, have I ever worn this shirt before? So I always have to try very hard to not do that. And lately, in an effort to not repeat shirts too often for performances, I've actually, this sounds really like whatever, but I shop at H&M all the time, and I have so many, like, just cheap clothes lying around, and I started like recycling stuff and taking things to Goodwill so I don't accidentally wear it too many times.
And the good thing about H&M is that you can't wear it more than once because it really doesn't survive the second wearing. So this is a good strategy.
True.
It's a good strategy. True. Now, I'm not going to make you tell one of the stories, but if people went on YouTube, they can see you talking about the Spice Girls. They can see you talking about I particularly enjoy hearing about your gym husband.
Long story short for the uninitiated, I fell in love with this personal trainer at my gym, and I make no money, but I made it happen where I approached him and said, I need you to be my trainer. I will make this happen financially. And I was so smitten with this guy, and I don't get crazy or obsessive, but like, I would walk away from these sessions and be like, my heart hurts right now, and I love him. Like, I felt like I was a teenager all over again. And then he knew I was working with him once I started doing these shows, and he got fired, and I remember how he would always ask, oh, you doing any shows lately? How's everything going? But I ran into him whenever I was doing, at that point, it was like the first paid gig I had had. It was like the highest profile thing I had been doing at the time. And my friends wanted to have a quick drink before the show, and I walk in, and there he is working at the restaurant. He goes, hey, David, what's up? And I thought I was just going to have an emotional meltdown, but it didn't mess with me too much. But I still go to that restaurant every now and then just to see him because I love him. And he's going to realize one day that we're supposed to have babies together.
I can only imagine that he's an avid listener to this show Is So Gay. And this is going to be it. This is going to be that catalyst that brings you together.
The best thing, I did a workshop version of that story and won with it. So the one that's on YouTube is not the winning version of it, but I workshopped it. And then I took it to New York for the Risk podcast. And it was so funny. When I did the winning version of it, I came off stage and there were like four different groups of people that came up and they said, are you talking about so-and-so? And they said his name. And I'm like, if you think he'd be okay with it and not freak out, then yes, I'm talking about him. But if he would freak out, then no. Talking about a different person.
Yes. If he's going to freak out, then actually it was about a woman and I just changed the gender.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I did.
Totally fine.
I'm playing gay on stage. I'm gay for non-pay.
Gay for the win. Gay for the win.
I like that.
Oh, yeah. Now, I have to imagine our listeners are going to be wondering, what is it you win when you win?
You win bragging rights.
Nice.
For when you do the regular Moth Story Slam, it's just bragging rights, and then you get to perform at their annual Grand Slam, which is the 10 most recent winners. And I just did that show a couple of weeks ago again. And it's fun. It's really exciting to, with a regular Story Slam, it's technically like an open mic. Anybody can put their name in. And, it's a very supportive audience by and large, but you'll have people sometimes that are so dripping with talent when they get up there. And then you have some other people that don't really have a story with what they're doing and they didn't prepare it enough or they didn't do this or they didn't do that. And so it comes off as a little awkward. And, people are still supportive and they applaud them and tell them they did great and all that. But whenever you do the Grand Slam, you have 10 people who have already won a Story Slam before. So they've got some experience under their belt, but still some of them are like real pros and some of them, they're still really, really nervous. And I love seeing people there that have only won once and they've only performed a couple of times and they're really nervous because there's something so genuine about what they're doing and how much it means to them when they get up there. Like, I don't know. It just makes my heart swell whenever I see people doing that stuff.
Yes. Speaking of, we should do very quickly because she'll kill me if we don't. Can we do a quick Laura Wimble shout out? You take care of that one.
Hi, Laura. I love you. Because she hooked me up to you, and she did the Grand Slam with me here in Pittsburgh. She drove all the way up from Cleveland, and she won her Story Slam. And it was so funny. She came up to me after the show, and she goes, can I get a picture with you? And I go, well, you're really rubbing the salt in the wound there with that wind. There was a wind you got. And she goes, no, I didn't know that you lived in Pittsburgh. I've heard you on Risk so many times, and, like, I love you. I think you're so hilarious. I've heard episodes of your show. I was like, really? I love this world. This is fun.
It brings people together.
Yeah. I don't know. It's funny, like, the whole world of network of people that that this whole thing has opened up for me is so bizarre. Just one thing connects to another, and I'm meeting just the most wonderful people throughout this whole ride. So yeah, it's good stuff. I would recommend it to anybody. If you have never performed in front of somebody before, it's the most easygoing crowd is at a storytelling show. Very supportive people, like especially they love first timers too. So
yeah,
it's good stuff. I'd recommend it to anybody.
I love that you're meeting all these people, and I'm meeting guys whose wives are Jewish. It's all good. Well, before we intro our very special segment, tell everybody where they should go to follow all the cool things you're doing, what's coming up for you.
Yes. Thank you. Well, my regular website is buymeahotdog.com, but because in addition to loving pizza, I love hot dogs.
Nice.
But you can like me on Facebook at facebook.com/buymeahotdog. You can follow me on Twitter with the same username, buymeahotdog. And then the show itself, Two Gays, No Girls at a Pizza Place, it's on iTunes, it's on Stitcher, it's on SoundCloud. You can find it on any of those. You can follow the Twitter account at Two Gays, No Girls. You can like us on Facebook at Two Gays, No Girls. Lots of places to catch up with Dave Montgomery and his ridiculous fictional world.
Love it. I love it. Now, the holidays are technically over, but when you pitched this to me, I said I don't care because we want to play this for everybody. Intro the Christmas carol that everybody is going to now hear.
Oh, God. Yeah. Essentially, I guess the only thing you really need to know going into it, other than it's got the most wonderful cast of people reading my stupid words. Other than that, you really need to know that Nick, that I typically do my podcast with, we have a running joke about who pays the tab each time. And what you need to have as a setup for this is just the joke that I never, ever pay my tab. But I promise I really do. It just made for a really great story.
Nice. All right, folks, we are going to play for you a Christmas carol. It's so enjoyable, and you guys are going to love it. Right after that happens, everybody's strolling over to buymeahotdog.com and follow all the cool things that David Montgomery is doing. David, what an absolute treat having you on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Don We Now Our Gay Apparel, a Two Gays, No Girls Christmas. Written by David Montgomery and narrated by Kevin Allison, starring Thomas Lennon as Tiny Twink, Ed Begley Jr. as the Warning Ghost, Pam Murphy as the Ghoul of Previous Winter Holidays, Justin Cusson as the Ghoul of Currently Happening Religious Winter Holidays, Jeff Hiller as the Angel of Meth, Todd Buonapane as the Pizzeria Employee, Nick Nemec as Nick, and David Montgomery as David, the bartender, and the waiter. You pick up the tab this time. I got my eye on that guy over there.
I always pick up the tab.
Who cares?
Can you at least get the tip?
I'm hoping for more than just the tip if I play my cards right with him. Oh, he's looking over here. See ya. Merry Christmas.
Nick pulls out his wallet, and what does he find? The bartender snatched up his nickels and dimes. A problem that's happened more often than not. David never pays his bar tab, especially after shots.
What, no tip?
Let me go get some more cash out of the ATM.
That night, Dave awoke as his new friend was leaving. His eyes red from dehydration. He was almost dry heaving. He couldn't believe his eyes. What a terrible sight! A ghost stood before him and gave him a fright.
David, you've been such a jerk.
But you're the one in my apartment without permission.
It's all good. I'll be leaving soon. You'll be visited by 3 more ghosts over the next 3 nights.
That's fine, as long as they're not ugly.
Slept sound as could be, till something awoke him, something too dark to see!
Who are you? What are you?
I'm the ghost of previous winter holidays!
Is that like the ghost of Christmas past in the classic Charles Dickens story A Christmas Carol?
Well, for legal reasons, we bear no similarity whatsoever!
Well, I'll be. What are you doing here?
I'm here to show you how your behavior affects others. Look, David, look at how you're behaving with your friend Nick in the past.
I want more pizza.
David, you've already gone through 2 whole pies. Maybe we should settle up with the waiter before we continue. We've been here for hours.
Settle up? I've got a... go to the bathroom.
Look, my shift is ending, so I'm going to need you 2 to pay your tab. Cash or credit?
Credit? Here you go.
You see the error of your ways?
I do. Had I known Nick was paying, I would have ordered much more.
Ugh. How about this situation from the same weekend?
I forgot my wallet. Can you spot me?
We are at Best Buy, and you just bought a 62-inch plasma. You're kidding, right?
Thanks, buddy.
Ah, now do you see?
I think I do. I should have gone with a 3D model.
You're f***ing hopeless. Goodbye!
With his same greedy ways, and got drunk that evening at the expense of other gays. When he had too much, he went home and blacked out. He was awakened once more and screamed,
"What's this about?"
Poor greedy David. I am the ghoul of currently happening religious winter holidays.
Like the ghost of Christmas present?
I bear no resemblance whatsoever.
You really kinda do, though.
Let us continue. I've been sent to show you the error in your ways and how your thoughtless greed is affecting others.
Teach me a lesson, but please know that I had 7 Jack and Dives tonight, so I likely won't remember this tomorrow.
Buy me a shot and I'll fit on your lap!
I'm sorry, Tiny Twink. Daddy just doesn't have the money for that.
It's okay. I'll just sip people's drinks as they go to the bathroom.
But your vodka allergy, how will you know?
Just another selfless act.
Hey, Twink, what would I do without you?
Not sure, but you should figure it out soon. If someone buys me a drink, I'm going home with them tonight instead.
But you've been flirting with me all night.
Sorry, didn't know you were broke.
Damn you, David Montgomery.
Now do you see? Your greed is crippling, but generosity can go a long way.
You're right. If I go back now, I could buy Tiny Twink a drink, and he could go home with me.
F*** this. I'm out. This guy's hopeless.
The ghoul gave up on David, feeling devoid of power. But he'd find another visitor at another late hour. So on the third night, an angel addicted to meth visited David, speaking of horror and death.
Wake up!
Oh, God, what are you? Let me guess, the ghoul of future winter holidays.
And the angel of meth. And yes, I'll be doing a similar job to the character you described.
Go ahead, but please don't touch anything. Show me what the future is like. I am totally paying attention.
In the future, as you can see... Wait, are you on Grindr while I show you the future?
Guilty.
Ugh. Come with me, David. I want to show you something.
I'm floating. How are you doing this? Also, this phone is the 6S Plus, so if we float too high and I drop it, you are paying for it.
Greedy bastard.
What is this?
Just watch.
What is this?
Welcome to One Gay, No Daves, at a Pizza Place. My name is Nick Nemec.
You're kidding me. He stole the show from me?
Nick, you are such a good person. You always tip us so nice. Pizza's on us this time. So glad that David's not around, eh? Three cheers for Nick! Hippa hip!
Hooray!
Hippa hip!
Hooray!
Hippa hip!
Hooray!
What is this? How do I fit into all of this?
You don't. Your greed and inability to pay your own way has caused bars and pizza places to ban you for life, and you starve to death. Nick inherits your shoe collection and sells them all on eBay, donating all proceeds to charity.
Nick, the boys and I wanted to stop by where you record the show and give you some free shots for those wonderful, generous tips you've given us over the years. Three cheers for Dave's death. Hip hip hooray!
Hooray!
Hip hip hooray! Hip hip
hooray!
Now do you see?
I do see. I want to pay Nick back for all those times. Maybe it's not too late. Nick, are you still at the bar? There's still time. Last call isn't for a few more minutes. Nick, I've been so greedy.
One would almost say you've been Scrooge-like.
Let me buy you a drink. And you, Tiny Twink, I'd like to buy you an appetizer as well as a shot of your choice. I want to buy you all an appetizer as well as a shot of your choice.
The kitchen closed 4 hours ago. It's Christmas Eve and it's last call.
Then shots for everyone. And get ready for me to max out my credit card with the gratuity you'll be getting from me this Christmas.
I wish you'd said tip, so that way I can make a sex joke. But I like gratuity just the same.
Merry Christmas, everyone! Merry Christmas to us all!
So David learned a lesson, and Christmas was merry. The bartender poured shots, some pink, some blueberry. When he saw the gratuity, he squealed with delight. Go home to your families. It's last call, and good night.
Two Gays, No Girls at a Pizza Place is hosted and produced by David Montgomery. You can like him on Facebook at facebook.com/buymeahotdog and follow him on Twitter with the username buymeahotdog. You can follow Nick Nemec on Twitter at Nick Nemec. For more information on the show, visit buymeahotdog.com. Our theme song is Like Us Before It's Cool Too by The Wreckeds and is available now on iTunes.
Like us before it's cool to do. Before. the kids at school do. Like us before, it's cool to give us a chance. Like us before, it's cool to. Before the kids at school do. Like us before, it's cool to. At the dance. At the dance.
All right, folks, and we are back. How flippin' fun was that? It's so amazing to be able to feature the voices of fun and entertaining people doing fun and entertaining things. The whole bottom line, folks, if you don't get the message, it's all about using your voice in the way that you know how to use it to make a difference in this world. Whether it's entertaining folks, whether it's hosting your own podcast or your own radio show, going and telling a story at your local storytelling night, writing a letter to the editor, whatever it is that you do to use your voice the way you know how to use it best, that's what you just heard, and you're going to hear more of it in every single week to come with This Show Is So Gay. But first, before you hear more of that, let's get to the latest LGBT news that's out there. I feel like every single week we're going to have another update on who's running for president and who's dropping out. Well, it is the latter this week. The only Republican presidential candidate to support marriage equality dropped out of the race this week. Former New York Governor George Pataki had made barely a blip in the polls, and he'd been relegated to the undercard debates. Even so, he almost never touted his support for marriage equality while on the campaign trail, even in the days after the landmark Supreme Court ruling in June. MSNBC's Rachel Maddow had reported that Pataki recently failed to make the ballot in key states such as Florida and Ohio. He made an announcement this week in a TV ad that the New York Times reported aired in Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. In it, Pataki called on the voters to pick, quote, the right person, someone who will bring us together. He went on to say this, quote, if we truly are going to make America great again, which, you know, references Donald Trump's campaign slogan, he said, if we are truly going to make America great again, then we need a candidate to unite us again in our belief in this great country. Real estate developer and GOP donor Earl Mack, who had backed Pataki, was among those lamenting the decline of moderate voices. Mack told the New York Times in reaction to the announcement this, quote, it's time for a more moderate Republican. If we don't have a candidate that understands the Supreme Court has ruled that gay marriage is legal and a woman's right to choose is legal, if they can't get that through their head, they're going to keep losing elections. So there you go. Really, the only moderate Republican out there running for president has dropped out of the race. That would be George Pataki. More news on the Republican presidential campaign front. The real Ted Cruz is not the one Iowa voters are seeing, said opponent Rick Santorum, who is trying to win over evangelicals. Again, as I said last week, I didn't even know that Rick Santorum is still in the mix. Santorum told Newsmax this week this, quote, Ted Cruz is not the social conservative that he's portraying himself as. Santorum, the former U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania, who won Iowa in the last GOP presidential primary cycle, says that with a month left before the caucuses, quote, this is when people do their homework. People are going to start to say, oh, wait a minute, he says these things, but he's not. So yes, this would be Rick Santorum, who apparently is still running for president. Who knew? I did not know that. He is trying to win the evangelicals. So, of course, he is bringing out as much anti-gay rhetoric as he can possibly put out there. Santorum also mentioned an article in the Iowa Republican headlined Ted Cruz, the False Prophet of Social Conservatism. Like Santorum does, editor-in-chief Craig Robinson accuses Cruz of couching his opposition to same-sex marriage with an argument about states' rights. Robinson warned this, quote, Cruz recently flip-flopped on the issue of marijuana legalization. Just like his answer on gay marriage, Cruz said, if the citizens of Colorado decide that they want to go down that road, that's their prerogative. I personally don't agree with it, but that's their right. Cruz's position is one that is easy for him to defend and, frankly, is rather politically expedient, but it also can get him crossways with social conservatives in a hurry, end quote. Here's the deal. As we get closer and closer to all of these primaries, which is happening in just a month and a half, it's only 6 or 7 weeks till we get to that Iowa caucus. Oh boy, we're going to see more and more anti-gay rhetoric being brought out there for all the public to see, because there are still 10 or 11, I don't even know if it's 10 or 11, it might be more, I don't think it's less, Republican candidates for president. And so they have to distinguish themselves from each other in some way. And unfortunately, one of the ways that they can distinguish themselves from each other is to be more anti-gay than the one before him, than the woman next to him. So we're even seeing Donald Trump, who previously had said that he might be willing to support that pledge that all of the other Republicans are making, that in their first 100 days, they're going to devote their energy to passing that Religious Freedom Act or law or whatever it is that they think is more important than all the other real issues going on with this country. Well, even since we said that last week, Donald Trump has come out and said, no, I will sign that pledge. That is a pledge I'm willing to sign. And so there is this idea, in order to appeal to Republicans, you certainly cannot go against such a pledge. You certainly can't stray too far from anti-gay rhetoric. It's just extraordinarily disappointing, but that's what it is. That's what it is. Let's turn our attention to Indiana. Holy cow, does this suck? An Indiana lawmaker is out to damage his state's already battered reputation by proposing a bill that would make it illegal for transgender people to use restrooms corresponding with their gender identity. The politician, Republican Jim Tomes, is outspoken on the perceived need for such a bill. He said this on Christmas Eve. By the way, this is what he said on Christmas Eve. Christmas spirit. I'm a gay Jew from New Jersey, and even I know this is not the Christmas spirit. It's not the Christmas spirit to be saying things like this. But he said this on Christmas Eve, quote, "We've walked through a doorway we'll never go back through, and we're going to have to address some concerns that are now facing us. If you were born a man, then you are obliged to use the male's restroom," end quote. That's how simple he thinks it is. If you were born a man, then you are obliged to use the male's restroom. This is an elected official. This is the nuance that he is bringing to talking about gender identity. If you were born a man, then you are obliged to use a male's restroom. But Republican Jim Tomes doesn't think that you are just obliged. He thinks that there should be sanctions if that doesn't happen. His legislation would include punishments of a year in prison and up to $5,000 in fines for those using bathrooms that don't match their gender at birth. Indiana has already been caught in this national debate regarding LGBT rights earlier this year when Governor Mike Pence signed into law the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was viewed by many as a license to discriminate. After an enormous outcry, Pence signed a fix to the bill, which ostensibly made it more difficult for homophobic business owners to refuse service to LGBT patrons. So, I don't know that such a bill is going to go anywhere, but again, this is what folks who we have elected to office think are the most important ways to spend their time. So there is a zero-sum game when it comes to politics. There just is. You can't work on everything. It doesn't work like that. If you work on something, that actually does mean that there's something else that you can't work on, because there's a finite amount of time working in politics, particularly in some of these state governments where their legislative session, it's not 12 months, it's not 11 months. In some states like Vermont, it's only like 5 or 6 months. I might be a little off on that, but I think it's only like 5 or 6 months. So if you take your time to spend it on a bill saying if you were born a man, then you are obliged to use the male's restroom, that doesn't mean, oh, look, he's for this. No, it actually means he doesn't have time to be doing some other things. And if it goes up for debate, that means that in that finite amount of time that our politicians have, there are things that could potentially be helping our communities economically. How about economically? With regards to education, how about education? But there are things that get put on the back burner because we are spending our time on things like this. Again, if you were born a man, apparently, according to Republican Jim Tomes and his nuanced sense of gender identity, if you were born a man, then you are obliged to use the male's restroom. Obliged. Oh, Indiana, not a good use of your time. Not a good use of our time. Our condolences to everyone who knew her in Chicago, everybody who worked with her, her family, her friends. Our condolences to those of Catherine Kitt Duffy, who was Chicago's first mayoral liaison to the LGBT community. She was a longtime political activist. She just died this week at the age of 71. She suffered from complications from heart surgery. Mayor Harold Washington appointed Duffy as his LGBT liaison in 1984. The Windy City Times noted this quote, "As a heterosexual ally, Duffy was a constant force in the 1980s Chicago gay community as AIDS started to take its toll, and as the community fought for a civil rights bill, Duffy was a key link for the community to the mayor and vice versa. Her appointment was one of several efforts by Washington, the city's first black mayor, to make government more open and responsive to all." She recalled this in a 2007 interview quoted by the Windy City Times. She said this, quote, "It paralleled what Harold was trying to do for the entire city. It was certainly time for that change. We were flying blind, but with a complete commitment to fairness." In 1985, Duffy convened a mayoral committee on gay and lesbian issues, and during her time as liaison, she joined other advocates in lobbying for a gay rights ordinance. The city council finally passed that ordinance in 1988, the year after Mayor Washington died. Kitt Duffy was also the first executive director of the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, a funding and advocacy group formed in 1985. In 1991, she helped found the Illinois Federation for Human Rights, a predecessor to today's statewide LGBT rights organization, Equality Illinois. In 2008, Duffy was inducted into the Chicago Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame as a friend of the community, the designation for straight allies. She remained active in progressive politics until just weeks before her death, according to the city Windy Times. Again, condolences to anybody who benefited from the work of Catherine Kitt Duffy, Chicago's first mayoral liaison to the LGBT community, longtime political activist. And by the way, that would be many, many, many countless folks who benefited from Catherine Kitt Duffy's work. Amazing figure in our community. A new book out, a book to be published in Hong Kong in the new year, says Zhao Enlai, Communist China's much-respected first premier, was probably gay. He was probably gay. Communist China's much-respected first premier, probably gay despite his long marriage, and he had once been in love with a male schoolmate 2 years his junior. It is a contention certain to be controversial in China, where the Communist Party likes to maintain its top leaders are more or less morally irreproachable, and where homosexuality is frowned upon, though no longer officially repressed. The Hong Kong-based author Soi Wing Mui, she is a former editor at a liberal political magazine. She has written about gay-themed subjects before, though this is her first book. She reread already publicly available letters and diaries that premier and his wife wrote, including ones that detailed his fondness for a schoolmate and emotional detachment from his wife, and this author concluded that this premier was probably gay. That is going to anger quite a few folks there in China. I am sure we will be hearing about that more in the new year. Reports from the West African nation of Senegal say that the government has arrested 11 people of homosexual acts. If convicted, those accused, who were rounded up at a celebration of a gay marriage, they face up to 5 years in prison. This is a reminder, all of our listeners, this is what's happening in other countries. Incidents like this are rare but not unprecedented, particularly in West Africa. Similar arrests have taken place in Nigeria, Gambia, and Cameroon, but it may be in part a backlash against American efforts. In 2013, in what was seen across Africa as an overbearing attempt to influence policy, President Obama raised the issue of LGBT equality with the Senegalese President Macky Sall, but President Sall doubled down, saying that Senegal would decide its own laws, and added that it had banned the death penalty, thus putting it ahead of the United States on at least one human rights issue. In March of 2014, Senegal sentenced 2 men to 6 months each in prison for the crime of homosexuality. Again in 2015, during Obama's trip to Kenya, leaders from across the continent warned the president not to lecture Africans on human rights, especially same-sex marriage. And earlier this month, the New York Times published a controversial and error-filled account of LGBT issues in Africa under the headline, "U.S. Support of Gay Rights in Africa May Have Done More Harm Than Good." That piece quoted a Nigerian human rights activist who described Nigeria's 2014 anti-gay law as blowback against American intervention. So there you go. Not good news in Senegal, and indeed more work to do in Africa. The big news last week was all about the FDA. The FDA lifted their 3-decade-old ban on gay and bisexual men so that they too may participate in the selfless act of blood donation. I saw all over Facebook that people were celebrating. Yay! Gay men can give blood. Yay, bisexual men can give blood. No, folks, please keep reading this amendment to what the FDA has put out there. Sure, you can give blood, gay men. Sure, you can give blood, bisexual men. But only if you have been celibate for the past year. If you have not had sex for the past year, then indeed you may give blood, but only in that situation. I don't even really want to talk about this too much. It's kind of a bummer to me, but I guess I highlight it just to highlight to you all, please keep reading the article. The ban was not lifted. Sure, fine, technically there is no more lifetime ban, but there are still details in these blood donation guidelines that effectively tell gay men and bisexual men, you will not be giving blood. You need to be celibate for a year. So the idea is that, again, this weekend, I might have a sexual encounter with my boyfriend. I don't write it out. I don't plan it. This might be too much information for you, but I don't plan it. But the idea is that it can't be spontaneous. I need to stop and say, no, I'm sorry, Rich. We can't do that. I would like to give blood in a year. Yeah. So it's effectively still a ban. I'm just putting that out there. Our buddy, Pastor Kevin Swanson, is at it again. The Colorado-based Swanson, who is a pastor at the Reformation Church of Elizabeth, he made headlines in November for blasting Harry Potter in a convoluted speech at the National Religious Liberties Conference. His issue with Potter, it seems, stemmed from J.K. Rowling's claim that she always thought of Dumbledore, the wizard, as a gay man. Now, however, the pastor is taking aim at Hillary Clinton. He is arguing that the 2016 Democratic presidential hopeful, she's going to turn children gay if she's elected. That's right. If we elect Hillary Clinton, she's going to turn children gay. That's according to Colorado-based pastor Kevin Swanson. Swanson made the claim in the December 28th episode of his Generations radio program while discussing the case of Matthew Barrett, who successfully won a discrimination lawsuit against Massachusetts Fontbonne Academy earlier this month. The court ruled that the Roman Catholic Girls High School had discriminated against Barrett in 2013 when officials revoked a job offer after learning he was married to another man. He then said this, quote, "Why wouldn't Hillary Clinton get full reign upon this nation to continue the destructive pattern, destroy the social fabric of the nation, the family, of course, so that, of course, there will be 75% of kids born outside of wedlock to single mothers by the year 2030, so to be sure that tremendous majorities of American kids are taken down the track towards homosexuality, toward the destruction of sexuality with pornography habits, illegitimate divorce, then the shack-up rate being 30 times what they were in 1970, and so forth." Yes, this is Pastor Swanson. He's also the guy who I mentioned a few months ago. He slammed the Disney mega hit Frozen. He said that it treats homosexuality and bestiality in a light sort of way. He said that it indoctrinates children into being gay. That's right, Frozen. It does that, apparently. So there you go. That's Pastor Swanson. Yeah, one more story for you. Aaron and Melissa Klein, the owners of Sweet Cakes by Melissa. We've certainly talked about them a ton on the show before. They have finally paid the fine they owe for violating the Oregon state law by refusing to sell a wedding cake to a same-sex couple. After refusing to pay for over 6 months and refusing to even obtain a bond or an irrevocable letter of credit, the Kleins turned over a check for the $136,927.07, which includes interest on the $135,000 they owe. The sum of money was likely easily available to the Kleins because the Oregonian, which is a newspaper, estimates that online donation efforts have raised the couple at least $515,000, and money continues to come in. This estimate also likely doesn't account for any donations sent directly to them in the mail. Still, conservatives attempted to spin the story as devastating to the couple's finances. I don't think that it was. There's no way that Sweet Cakes by Melissa was turning a profit of $300,000+, which if you take the $515,000 that they have gathered online and you subtract the say, 137, I'm rounding up, $137,000, there's no way that their store was taking in that much profit. There is absolutely no way. If you'll recall, I live with Becca. She's an amazing pastry chef. She's really, really good. She's not turning that much profit, trust me. So yeah, let's not say that this couple, their finances have been devastated. They very much have not been devastated. But at least they have paid their $137,000. That's what it will cost, folks, if you refuse to sell a wedding cake to a same-sex couple, that there actually is a price tag attached to discrimination. Let that hopefully be a deterrent to maybe one person to not discriminate, but hopefully let's work on more than one person. And that is this week's news for you. Our huge, huge thanks to David Montgomery. Please go check out his show. We will provide the links right there on thisshowisogay.com. What great work he is doing. Folks, please go to a storytelling show. There's so much happening at these storytelling shows. I'll be doing one next week. If you are in the Cleveland area on January 6th at the Happy Dog at 7:30 p.m., I'll be doing the Keep Talking storytelling show. It's my favorite here in Cleveland. It's super fun. It's super fun. Hey, it's also the new year, so I want to pause here and just thank you guys for another incredible year that you have spent with us. It has been such a treat talking to these amazing folks. It has been such a treat getting all of your responses, your ideas, your feedback, everything. We answer every single email that you send to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Never hesitate to send an email to ken@thisshowisogay.com. We already have incredible plans for you. We have a huge announcement coming out probably in the next 3 weeks. So excited to tell you about that, that furthers everything that we're doing here. But first, just wishing you the happiest, the safest, the healthiest new year. Go out there, go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. Get out there and do it, folks. This is your year. This is your year to use your voice. It will make a difference for somebody else, and I guarantee it will make you feel amazing when you use your voice in the way that you know how to use it to make a difference. Get out there and do it. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
We're coming to the edge, running on the water, coming through the fog, your sons and daughters.